Hello, listeners, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, July 1st. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a look at the weather first thing. Welcome to July. This month will start with highs into the 80s, thanks to a cold front that's moving through here this morning. This front didn't have any rainfall along it last night, and chances are very limited for southern Iowa this morning. Plan on highs generally into the 80s this afternoon as the sky clears out. This weekend is interesting in that isolated storms may flare up tomorrow, though Sunday continues to look dry. By Independence Day itself, we find ourselves in a favorable spot for clusters of storms to roll through. Right now, it's too early to determine the severity or if there will be any impacts to fireworks shows. Now back to the front page, we have four stories to read. Waterloo nearing City Fiber Network. Fireworks and parades mark the 4th. Supreme Court limits EPA in curbing emissions. And the lead story, and we'll begin with this one, pig precedent reversed. Odor, water pollution are no longer cause to sue, says Iowa's top court. This story filed by David Pitt of the Associated Press and begins with a photograph of the interior of a hog containment facility. Dateline Des Moines. The Iowa Supreme Court on Thursday reversed a long-standing precedent that allowed landowners to sue for damages when a neighboring hog farm causes water pollution or odor problems that affect quality of life. The court concluded 4-3 that a 2004 decision was wrong. The earlier ruling established that a portion of Iowa's law providing immunity to livestock farms from neighbors' nuisance lawsuits violated the inalienable right clause of the Iowa Constitution. It also found neighbors could sue if they had lived in the area long before the farm began operating, had sustained significant hardship, and did not benefit from the nuisance immunity granted to the livestock farm. Justice Thomas Waterman wrote in the Thursday decision that, quote, protecting and promoting livestock production is a legitimate state interest, and granting partial immunity from nuisance suits is a proper means to that end, unquote. Iowa is the nation's leading pork producer with 23 million pigs, most kept in large confinement buildings that collect nitrogen-rich manure from the animals and use it to fertilize fields. The court said judges must use a rational basis to review future court challenges, a standard that will be difficult to overcome because it presumes state laws are passed for the benefit of the public. The decision is a significant blow to property owners in rural areas who want to take legal action over expanding hog farms. Quote, it's going to make it more difficult. It was difficult anyway, as it was, said Wallace Taylor, the attorney representing landowner Gordon Garrison, who bought 300 acres of land in Emmett County in northwest Iowa in 1972, built a home there in 1999, and was disturbed in 2015 when farmer J.D. Moore built a 4,000-pig operation about a half mile away. Garrison said he could smell its odor more than 100 days of the year, sometimes all day, and it caused him to experience nausea and dizziness that forced him to stop working outdoors. Other neighbors supported his complaints. He also complained of water pollution caused by manure spread on adjacent farm fields. Garrison sued in 2020, calling the hog farm a nuisance. A district court judge dismissed his lawsuit in May 2021, and he appealed. Waterman wrote Thursday that balancing the competing interests of hog farmers and neighbors, quote, is a quintessentially legislative function involving policy choices our Constitution places with the elected branches, unquote. Under the ruling, property owners can sue when the damage results from a farm's failure to comply with a federal or state law or regulation, or when the farmer failed to use prudent and generally accepted management practices. Quote, the Iowa Supreme Court restored the Iowa legislature's role in striking a balance between the right to farm and the impact on those who choose to live in rural Iowa, unquote, said James Prey, the lawyer who represented Moore. The Iowa High Court has 6 conservative judges appointed by Republican governors and 1 Democratic appointee. Last Friday, the court overturned its 2018 decision that guaranteed Iowans the fundamental right to abortion under the state constitution. Justices Brent Appel and Christopher McDonald wrote in dissenting opinions that they would have upheld the 2004 case that provided for hog farm challenges. Justice Dana Oxley agreed. Appel said the purpose of the Inalienable Rights Clause in the Bill of Rights is to ensure that individual liberties are not subject to erosion by an aggressive legislature or executive branch. Quote, are we telling the existing property owners that they are required to take one for the team as the private owners next door emit nuisance odors under a scheme of statutory immunity? He wrote. McDonald said Iowa's law immediately deprives a property owner of the right to assert a private nuisance action and seek full compensation, and that other states allow time for neighboring landowners to sue. Quote, in the end, the legal question presented in this case is a simple one. Does the Constitution mean what it says? Do the men and women of the state have the constitutional right to protect their property? The text of the Constitution, precedent, and history say yes. The majority says no, he wrote. Taylor said Iowans need to elect legislators who will rein in the livestock industry, who will listen to their concerns, and repeal the nuisance immunity law for hog farms. Next, we have a story filed by Maria Cooper. Waterloo Nearing City Fiber Network, Fiber Network Plan presented to Waterloo City Council. And the article begins with a photograph of the back of a network switch with lots of yellow cables coming out. Dateline Waterloo. Waterloo is one step closer to establishing a citywide broadband service. Magellan Advisors of Denver, Colorado, presented a broadband assessment to the City Council last week. The report said the design of a fiber backbone and fiber to the premises, or FTTP, will be completely finished by August. The broadband study began in January 2020, but was delayed due to COVID-19. The fiber backbone project will connect 100 miles of fiber optic cables to over 100 sites throughout the city, such as facilities, community centers, fire stations, city hall, and parks. That half of the project is expected to cost $29.28 million. The FTTP project will connect broadband to Waterloo homes. Magellan's Chief Operating Officer, Courtney Violette, said all 390 miles of streets in the city will be covered. This more extensive project is expected to cost $86.38 million. Waterloo received $31.24 million from the Federal American Rescue Plan that can be used for broadband purposes. Michelle Widener, the city's chief financial officer, said officials are still working on a funding plan for the project. A portion of those federal dollars would be used. Violette noted the funds could support broadband development in areas of the city where access, affordability, and reliability are concerns. Other potential funding could come from federal grants and general obligation bonds. The study came after the Waterloo Industrial Development Association and others encouraged the city to consider starting a municipal utility, similar to Waverly or Cedar Falls, to provide internet to homes and businesses due to concerns about MediaCom and CenturyLink. Magellan conducted a survey for Waterloo residents to ask about their current experience with broadband. Just over 2,700 people responded. 40% of the respondents said their main issue with their current provider is that it's too expensive. The study found the median download speed for residents is 75.26 megabits per second. The average bill for an expected speed of 100 megabits is $88.74. The report also outlined prioritized areas. These areas are determined by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's low to moderate income areas, average costs, and download and upload speeds. On a map of Waterloo, the consultants designated the highest priority networks as downtown Waterloo and neighborhoods near Unity Point Health Allen Hospital and Gates Park, mostly the northeast side of Waterloo. The report also outlined what neighbors would receive broadband first. The neighborhoods determined highest priority from the first map would also be the first to receive broadband, as well as the neighborhoods near Maple Lanes. The build-out concept was determined in phases. Phase one is where the company could connect the most homes for the least amount of money. Almost 11,000 homes would be connected in the first phase at a cost of $14.71 million, whereas phase three would connect almost 8,900 homes for $16.6 million. Fiber infrastructure designed by Magellan to monitor and detect emergencies in Waterloo's storm water and sewer drains was completed in the spring of 2021. Along with the design work, procurement of construction services and materials is expected to be complete in August. Agreements for services are expected to be finalized by January. Our next story was filed by Melody Parker. Cedar Valley to celebrate July 4th weekend with fireworks and festivities. From historic parades and concerts to family fun, lantern launches, and, of course, fireworks, the Cedar Valley is celebrating Independence Day weekend with dozens of activities. In Waterloo, festivities are Saturday from 5 p.m. to midnight at two stages downtown, with the Cedar River as a backdrop for fireworks. The Mayor's Fireworks, Red, White, and Lou, begins with the 5 p.m. performance of the Cedar Valley Big Band at the River Loop Amphitheater. The Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony Orchestra will perform a concert of inspirational and patriotic music at 7 p.m., followed by 42 Romeo, the Iowa Army National Guard rock band. Local filmmaker Carson Morrissey will MC the show. Quote, "The fireworks event brings the community together to celebrate Waterloo and our nation," said Mayor Quentin Hart. Quote, "Every year, the team brings more and more fun to the evening, making it the best fireworks festival in the state," unquote. On the River Loop Expo Plaza stage, Hart Smith will perform at 6 p.m. with Fool House from 8 to 10 p.m. Amanda Goodman and Tara Thomas will serve as MCs. A family fun zone will feature interactive displays, games, and activities in the North Plaza, located between Jefferson and Commercial Streets. Food and beverages will be available in both locations. Between bands on each stage, Fusion Dance, First Crusaders Drum Corps, Wit and Erica, and the Waterloo Community Playhouse Footloose cast will perform. Fireworks begin at 10 p.m. or at dark. Those attending are encouraged to be patient and attentive to road closures throughout the area. The event is a collaboration of the City of Waterloo, Main Street Waterloo, and Waterloo Center for the Arts. The fireworks display is sponsored by John Deere, with contributions from AECOM, ISG, and Tyson. Independence will welcome about 30,000 visitors for their Celebrate Indy July 4th weekend. Music, food, and activities are planned Friday through Monday. Downtown festivities will mark the community's 175th birthday from 5 to 10 p.m. today. The historic 161st Annual Independence Day Parade steps off at 9 a.m. Monday, followed at 10:45 a.m. with festivities at Riverwalk Park. The fireworks show over the Wapsipinicon River starts at 10 p.m. Between 8,000 and 10,000 onlookers are expected to line the downtown parade route, said Nikki Barth, Executive Director of the Independence Area Chamber of Commerce. Quote, "It's the oldest parade in Iowa. We have such a long-standing parade and, historically, the same route, and our name is Independence. So we're all about the 4th of July," Barth said, explaining why, quote, "celebrating Indy attracts such a large crowd." Barth is expecting 75 to 100 or more entries, including bands and floats, for the parade. It begins at City Hall, located at 1st Street and 4th Avenue, and follows 1st Street and 2nd Avenue north to the Buchanan County Fairgrounds. Other festivities, music, family activities, and fireworks are planned for the weekend in Shell Rock, including a kiddie parade, outdoor movie, beer tent, and music Friday night. On Saturday, the citywide garage sales will take place. On Sunday, a full day of activities begins at 11 o'clock a.m. on Cherry Street, culminating with music by Throwback Jack at 6 o'clock and fireworks at 10 p.m. Monday's parade begins at 10 o'clock a.m. In Waverly, an Independence Day patriotic concert will feature the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony Orchestra. Sunday's free concert begins at 7 p.m. in Coleman Park, 212 1st Street Northwest. Rhinebeck kicks off its 4th of July weekend celebration on Sunday with the Fireman's Dance on Main Street featuring the Pork Tornadoes from 8 to 10 p.m. Monday's activities include a 5K run walk, fishing derby, laser and water tag, bingo, beer garden, trap shoot, and at 1:30 p.m., the Grand Parade. At 7 p.m., Janie and the Growlers will perform. Elmwood Park and the surrounding area offer the best viewing of the fireworks show at 10 p.m. After the fireworks, a group lantern launch is planned at the Legion Shelter House. Now we have a story that was filed by the Associated Press. Journalist Mark Sherman, court limits EPA in curbing emissions. And the story opens with a photograph of the exterior of a coal-fired power plant in Colorado. Dateline, Washington. In a blow to the fight against climate change, the Supreme Court on Thursday limited how the nation's main anti-air pollution law can be used to reduce carbon dioxide emissions from power plants. By a 6-3 vote, with conservatives in the majority, the court said that the Clean Air Act does not give the Environmental Protection Agency broad authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from power plants that contribute to global warming. The decision, said environmental advocates and dissenting liberal justices, was a major step in the wrong direction. Quote, "a gut punch," one prominent meteorologist said. "At a time of increasing environmental damage attributable to climate change amid dire warnings about the future, the court's ruling could complicate the administration's plans to combat climate change. Its detailed proposal to regulate power plant emissions is expected by the end of the year. Though the decision was specific to the EPA, it was in line with conservative majority skepticism of the power of regulatory agencies, and it sent a message on possible future effects beyond climate change and air pollution. President Joe Biden aims to cut the nation's greenhouse gas emissions in half by the end of the decade and to have an emissions-free power sector by 2035. Power plants account for roughly 30% of carbon dioxide output. Quote, "capping carbon dioxide emissions at a level that will force a nationwide transition away from the use of coal to generate electricity may be a sensible solution to the crisis of the day," Chief Justice John Roberts wrote in his opinion for the court. But Roberts wrote that the Clean Air Act doesn't give EPA the authority to do so and that Congress must speak clearly on this subject. Quote, "a decision of such magnitude and consequence rests with Congress itself or an agency acting pursuant to a clear delegation from that representative body," he wrote. In a dissent, Justice Elena Kagan wrote that the decision strips the EPA of the power Congress gave it to respond to, quote, the most pressing environmental challenge of our time, unquote. Kagan said the stakes in the case are high. She said, quote, the court appoints itself, instead of Congress or the expert agency, the decision maker on climate policy. I cannot think of many things more frightening, unquote. Biden, in a statement, called the ruling another devastating decision that aims to take our country backwards. He said he would not relent in using my lawful authorities to protect public health and tackle climate crisis. And EPA head Michael Reagan said his agency will move forward with a rule to impose environmental standards on the energy sector. United Nations spokesman Stephanie Dujarric also weighed in to call the decision a setback in our fight against climate change when we are already far off track in meeting the goals of the Paris Agreement, unquote. The International Climate Accord that U.S. left during the Trump administration and re-entered once Biden took office. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrisey, who led the legal challenge to EPA authority, said the, quote, EPA can no longer sidestep Congress to exercise broad regulatory power that would radically transform the nation's energy grid and force states to fundamentally shift their energy portfolios away from coal-fired generation. But University of Georgia meteorology professor Marshall Shepard, a past president of the American Meteorological Society, said of the decision, quote, it feels like a gut punch to critical efforts to combat the climate crisis, which has the potential to place lives at risk for decades to come, unquote. Richard Revesz, an environmental expert at the New York University School of Law, called the decision, quote, a significant setback for environmental protection and public health safeguards, unquote. But he also said in a statement the EPA still has authority to address greenhouse gas emissions from the power sector. EPA Administrator Reagan said the agency, quote, will move forward with lawfully setting and implementing environmental standards that meet our obligation to protect all people and all communities from environmental harm, unquote. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York said the consequences of Thursday's decision, quote, will ripple across the entire federal government from the regulation of food and drugs to our nation's health care system, all of which will put American lives at risk, unquote. The power plant case has a long and complicated history that begins with the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan. That plan would have required states to reduce emissions from the generation of electricity, mainly by shifting away from coal-fired plants. But that plan never took effect. Acting in a lawsuit filed by West Virginia and others, the Supreme Court blocked it in 2016 by a 5-4 vote, with conservatives in the majority. With the plan on hold, the legal fight over it continued. But after President Donald Trump took office, the EPA repealed the Obama-era plan. The agency under Trump argued that its authority to reduce carbon emissions was limited, and it devised a new plan that sharply reduced the federal government's role in the issue. New York, 21 other mainly Democratic states, the District of Columbia, and some of the nation's largest cities sued over the Trump plan. The Federal Appeals Court in Washington ruled against both the repeal and the new plan, and its decision left nothing in effect while the new administration drafted a new policy. We turn the page now to the Cedar Valley section. Waverly Country Club votes to transfer ownership of property and operations to the city. Story filed by Andy Malone and begins with a photograph of the exterior of the Waverly City Hall. Dateline Waverly. Amid financial struggles and declining membership, a vote by the Waverly Country Club members has favored transferring its property and operations to the city on January 1st. The pending transfer was proposed by city administration, club general manager Emma Wagner, confirmed when reached by the telephone. However, it has yet to be presented to or approved by the city council in a public session. If given the green light by council, the city would also absorb the debt of the semi-private entity and be responsible for the services currently provided by the country club to the general public, said the proposal voted on by members. The potential transfer also comes after a lawsuit was filed in district court May 24th by the club's former general manager, Wesley Gade. Gade alleges that the club's board of directors failed to address female employees' complaints about members sexually harassing them and then tried to defame Gade after firing him in retaliation for bringing up these harassment concerns. He also is a former city councilman. The city is interested in including the club's property in its vision for substantial renovations and upgrades to Memorial Park, the soon-to-be former fairgrounds, and golf course, according to letters from country club officials. Quote, the city has no comment on either issue. Anything that has been discussed would have been in closed session and is not public, wrote Waverly City Administrator James Bronner in an email. The country club board president Sarah Claiborne also declined comment over text message. Though sharing the same building at 705 8th Street Southwest, which includes the clubhouse portion owned by the country club and the pro shop leased by the city from the country club, the Waverly Golf Course and the Waverly Country Club are in no way connected, states the club's website. The country club was registered as a 501c7 nonprofit in 2003, but it has been incorporated since 1958. The golf course is publicly owned. Quote, membership is required to enjoy country club amenities and events. However, bar, lunches, and other periodic offerings may be open to the public, said its website. Quote, though we are not connected, we do work closely with each other to offer Waverly a top-notch golf and country club experience, unquote. The Waverly Golf Commission is the recommending body of the golf course and would oversee the country club as well, said Wagoner. In turn, the club board would dissolve. The commission's current purview includes setting the rules and regulations, like fee schedules, that govern the use and management of the course, according to its website. All recommendations would need to be approved by the city council. Quote, the question before us now is, do we want to support the city's vision by enabling the property currently owned by the club to be included in the master plan? States a letter from the club's board of directors before the vote. Quote, if we decide we do not want to be included, then the city will move forward with a plan to build a new pro shop, learning center, driving range, and cart storage in another location, unquote. A letter from Wagoner reveals that membership declined from more than 340 members 10 years ago to 250 pre-COVID in 2019. The current membership now stands at 100 for the 2022 season. The membership decline has led to a reduction in services and, in turn, less incentive for people to join, said the board's letter. The board letter adds that the club has struggled financially for a number of years and voiced uncertainty that we can continue. During the last couple of years, the club has relied on COVID-19 pandemic relief funds to pay for the manager's salary, according to the board letter. Quote, we are committed to holding the city accountable for some of our requests as current owners of this prized property. I would like to ask our members who live in town to contact their city council members and ask them what they've heard and how they feel about the proposal, wrote Wagoner. Garrett Riordan, City Leisure Services Director, said the city leases the pro shop from the country club annually for $11,000. The city also provides the country club with snow removal services and is involved in an Iowa alcoholic beverage lease agreement with the club. The club board estimates conservatively that the license allows it to generate about $50,000 annually in on-course liquor sales. The revenue from the pro shop rental agreement and liquor sales could be lost if the transfer to the city does not happen, the board said in its letter. The country club also owns one-third of the golf course parking lot, tee number one, and a cart shed, said Riordan. Now we want to let you know that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, July 1st, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. We have one obituary to read today. Lloyd Edward Green, 79, died June 24, 2022, at Unity Point Health of natural causes. He was born June 16, 1943, in Waterloo, Iowa, son of Charles and Alice Green. Lloyd attended East High School and joined the military at 17. He served 24 years in the U.S. Army as a first sergeant, serving two terms in Vietnam, and was a former member of the Black Hawk County Veterans Affairs Commission. He married Mildred Green, and they later divorced. He married Ada B. Green September 15, 1979. Lloyd was a member at Union Missionary Baptist Church and a member and deacon at Community Baptist Church. Lloyd was a Mason in Massachusetts at PWM, William G. Butler Lodge, No. 12, Prince Hall, Grand Lodge Jurisdiction of Massachusetts, Inc. He was credited past Grand Lecturer. He was part of Noble of Syria Temple No. 31, Oasis of Boston, Desert of Massachusetts, and also past Worship Master. He demitted to the jurisdiction of Iowa. Lloyd served many years in the Knights of Pythias and was Grand Chancellor of Iowa, preceded in death by his mother and father, one sister, Jeanette Davis, and one brother, Ronald Green. He is survived by his wife, Ada Green, one son, Lloyd Gentry Green, spouse Stephanie of Minneapolis, Minnesota, three daughters, Yvonne Smith of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Cinnamon Battle of Marion, South Carolina, and Monette Smith of Springfield, Illinois, one brother, Tom Green of Waterloo, one sister, Della Green Shea, spouse James of Sacramento, California, 10 grandchildren, Ty, Tasha, Antion, Azharia, Charlotte, Lawson, Emmanuel, Lloyd L., Loyal, and Messiah, 13 grandchildren, one great-great-grandchild, and a host of nieces, nephews, and cousins. Memorials may be directed to the family at 630 Sherman Avenue. Services will be at 1 o'clock p.m. on Saturday at Union Missionary Baptist Church. Saunders Funeral Service is assisting the family. This next story appeared in yesterday's front page. Reynolds, no special session while courts decide on fetal heartbeat bill. Filed by Caleb McCullough of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau. Dateline Des Moines. Governor Kim Reynolds is not planning to call a special legislative session to pass abortion restrictions, but she suggested she may consider it if her attempt to bring back enforcement of Iowa's so-called fetal heartbeat bill fails in state courts. Reynolds, a Republican, on Tuesday announced plans to challenge a 2018 district court decision that halted enforcement of the bill, which would ban abortions after cardiac activity is detected in a fetus, usually around 6 weeks. The announcement came after a U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade, which guaranteed a federal right to an abortion, allowing states broad freedom to restrict abortion cases. She's also asking the Iowa Supreme Court to reconsider a recent ruling that overturned a previous ruling saying the state constitution guarantees the right to an abortion. While a win for Iowa Republicans, the ruling, which came before Friday's U.S. Supreme Court decision, still left room for courts to strike down some abortion restrictions under Planned Parenthood v. Casey's undue burden standard. Quote, we've got two laws in place, and so we're going to move forward with that and wait and see what the ruling is based on that, and then we'll reassess after that point, she said. Abortion is currently legal in Iowa until 20 weeks of pregnancy. without a special session. The next time state lawmakers will meet in the Capitol is early January 2023. If Republicans keep a majority in the legislature and Reynolds wins re-election, they're expected to pass more laws restricting abortion. In a statement after the Supreme Court ruling on Friday, Reynolds said she would not rest, quote, until every unborn Iowan is protected and respected, unquote. She didn't indicate on Wednesday what her end goal is for abortion access in Iowa. Quote, we have the heartbeat bill on the books, and so let's lift the injunction and let's make that a law, she said on Wednesday. Quote, and so we're going to start with that, unquote. On Friday, Republican Senate leader Jack Whitfer, a Republican from Ankeny, indicated Senate Republicans would seek abortion restrictions in response to the federal ruling. Quote, as a pro-life caucus, Senate Republicans have led on the protections of life and will continue to do so, he said in a statement. Quote, we look forward to continuing to advance the cause of the unborn, unquote. As for when the fetal heartbeat bill's injunction may be lifted, Reynolds said the timeline is in the court's hands after she filed the request to review the cases. Legislative Democrats have decried Reynolds' court challenges, saying Republicans are poised to roll back abortion access further. Quote, Iowa Republicans will not stop until they have completely banned abortions without exception, Senate Minority Leader Zach Walls, Democrat from Coralville, said on Tuesday. Quote, this is an incredibly dangerous action that threatens the health, safety, and future of Iowa women, unquote. Here's an editorial written by Art Cullen of the Storm Lake Times-Pilot. That's a cloud of inflation uncertainty overhead. My retired farmer friend spends his days glued to the crop markets on the computer trying to figure out which way the wind is blowing. He doesn't know. Quote, anyone who says they do is a damn liar, he said when I called last Wednesday. He is not necessarily opposed to inflation in commodity markets right now. Old MacDonald thought that markets should have opened up sharply on Tuesday following the Juneteenth federal holiday. A heat wave gripped the Midwest. You would think that would fire the markets. It didn't. He was flummoxed. The weather backed off, and so did prices, as they had for a couple weeks. By the time you read this, everything could have changed again with a fresh bombing in Ukraine or rain showers that did not materialize in Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana. On Monday, corn took another dive on moderate weather reports in the Midwest. Oil prices also lost some heat as markets sort out flows between Russia, China, and India. Is this the fever breaking? Did interest rate increases and promise of more start to take the mojo out of two principal drivers of inflation, food and energy? If you listen to the cable news, there is no net end in sight. If there is, the end comes with a hard thud, not a soft whoosh, in the form of a recession. The crops got planted. The heat wave helped with the U.S. wheat harvest. Indonesia is ramping up palm oil exports, which is putting pressure on soybeans. If you're banking on corn to recover its recent losses, Old MacDonald says, quote, hope ain't gonna cut it, unquote. A review by ag economists from the University of Illinois and the Ohio State University reports that federal forecasts show corn retreating to a long-term price near $4 per bushel, with soybeans at $10 and wheat at $5 out to 2032. They cite the Economic Research Service, the USDA, and the Congressional Budget Office. The USDA forecasts corn next year near $4.50 and soybeans at $10.35. This is the range they have traded in since 2006, the university economists note. In essence, 2021 and 2022 are an aberration caused by a combination of tight global stocks, production uncertainty, strong demand for grains from China, and grain disruptions from the Ukraine-Russia conflict. However, government forecasts suggest that the situation is not permanent and prices are expected to return to current longer-run averages, unquote. They estimate the break-even on corn in Illinois is $4.73 per bushel. If prices drop, they say it could drive down cash rents and land prices. They add the caveat at the end, quote, the timing of price declines is uncertain. The Ukraine-Russian war could have much longer-run impacts than are currently anticipated. How inflation and other events play out is uncertain, unquote. They really don't know any more than old McDonald or me. Neither does the Federal Reserve Board. There's the war, long-term drought in the Great Plains, and no more oil refinery capacity in the United States. Yet people are beginning to clamor for electric vehicles. Try to get your hands on an electric Ford Mustang, and blanching at leisure travel with gas prices at $4.50. People will drive less. Markets appear confident that drought-resistant crops will come through again and that farmers will plow up the kids' sandbox to get an extra bushel if it pays. When markets should go up, they go down. Quote, you just never know, says another old farmer friend. When the heat sets in around the 4th of July and there's just a spit of rain, you begin to think again that the fever won't break. But if interest rate increases slow down industrial production enough to reduce oil prices, corn follows. That might be happening already. But who knows? Nobody. At least not before the harvest and midterm elections. This editorial was written by Art Cullen of the Storm Lake Times Pilot. Courts and politics. Although expected, it remains stunning that within a week of each other, the Iowa Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court turned precedent on its ear and ruled that neither the state nor federal constitutions guarantee a right to abortion. The Iowa court on June 17th reversed its 2018 ruling affirming a state right to abortion. The U.S. court followed on June 24th by overturning Roe v. Wade, abandoning a half century of established law. We could see it coming, as we reflected before, when three state Supreme Court justices were unseated for legalizing gay marriage. Then Governor Kim Reynolds stacked the court with Republicans who were committed to the agenda. The same thing happened in Washington. Conservatives were relentless in pressing a judicial overthrow, and they finally got it done. First, when Senator Chuck Grassley blocked President Barack Obama's nomination of Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court, and then when Trump administration solidified the conservative majority with two more appointments. Yet we are taken aback by the audacity and the breadth of what the courts suggest, that states could ban gay marriage or even interracial marriage in the thinking of U.S. court justices or contraception. Once that sinks in, it's hard to fully appreciate how it may change our politics. The courts have become political agents when they change the law as elections will allow. This is a relatively new part of the calculus. As many more informed commentators have noted, the coalition led by Justice Samuel Alito rendered an opinion to satisfy their desires and not the law. That is, to leave rights to the legislative meat grinder. In Iowa, that suggests that abortion will be banned. We also believe it opens the door to revert to discrimination against gay people as a class. The public favors legal action to abortion and civil rights for all in the polling. Yet Iowans consistently have voted pro-life since Roe v. Wade was handed down in 1973. Grassley is standing testimony, not to mention a GOP trifecta controlling the legislature and governorship, and Iowans voted out those three justices who sought to expand civil rights to all Iowans. So we are not certain how these two recent rulings will play in the November midterm elections or change our politics beyond. It is sure to be uglier even than now. Neighbors will be set against each other on an issue to which there is no political solution in a truly pluralistic society. Iowa Democrats have been buried in the cockleburrs since Tom Harkin and Tom Vilsack vacated. It remains to be seen whether Deirdre Dejere and Mike Franken can excite the party into relevant opposition to Governor Reynolds and Senator Grassley. Abortion, guns, and gay rights might be what it takes to drive young people and women to the polls for Democrats this fall, if the attempted strangulation of public education were not enough. Franklin has what it takes to challenge Grassley on all those issues. The new politics of abortion does not necessarily help Grassley, since his pro-life base will be there. The court rulings do not add to his base. It should motivate those very voters who often sit out midterms, and those are women, minorities, and young people. Dejere won the nomination when everyone else dropped out. Reynolds is a champion of the pro-life movement. Dejere is a black woman from Des Moines with an opportunity to challenge that movement in a new political landscape. She has received relatively little party support because the party is picking burrs from its backside. She will find common cause with three strong congressional candidates, Representative Cindy Axne of West Des Moines, Liz Mathis of Cedar Rapids, and Christina Bohannon of Iowa City, for whom abortion rights will be central to their campaigns. It will be especially interesting to see how abortion is argued by Mathis against Representative Ashley Hinson in a Northeast Iowa district with a strong anti-abortion sentiment and a large Democratic base. Abortion is unlikely to determine the balance of the legislature, where Republican majorities are strong. It could tilt independents away from Grassley and Reynolds. It might not be the determinative issue that people think it is, at least in Iowa. It certainly is part of a dynamic that involves a crisis in democracy, gun violence that is politically and judicially out of control, and economy dogged by inflation and supply woes, and a shooting war in Europe. The court rulings may be the jolt that finally align the polls with the voting on abortion in Iowa. Now we're back to local news from the Courier. Iowa Irish Fest releases list of races. Story filed by Maria Cooper. Dateline Waterloo. On top of the musical acts and other festivities, Iowa Irish Fest will offer a series of races and rallies that people can sign up to participate in during the three-day event. The first event is the High Nelly Bike Ride, which starts at 9 a.m. August 6th. The ride begins near the corner of 4th and Sycamore Streets. Cost to enter the ride is $25 for adults, $20 for children ages 4 to 17, and $15 for children and adults who do not want a t-shirt. T-shirts are guaranteed if ordered by July 14th. Riders can pick up their packet for the event from 4 to 7 p.m. on August 5th or 8 a.m. on August 6th at the corner of Park Avenue and Mulberry Street. The ride will take place no matter the weather, and no refunds will be given if canceled. Riders can register at the website. At 10 a.m. August 6th, runners can sign up for a one-mile run, which loops around downtown Waterloo, called the Shamrock and Run Loop. There is also an option for runners to complete a 0.5K run, which is one block course that must be finished with a beverage of choice in hand. The race can be added on to the one-mile run. Runners have 1 hour to complete the race. The cost to enter is $35. Runners can register online at the website and click on the Shamrock and Fun Run button. Packet pickup and registration will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on August 5th during Iowa Irish Fest, or 8 to 10 a.m. before the race on August 6th. A t-shirt, race bib, goodie bag, free beer, snacks, and water are included in registration. Coming back this year is the Celtic Cruise Motorcycle Rally. The ride starts at 10 a.m. on August 7th. Riders will begin at Silver Eagle Harley-Davidson Yamaha at 4022 Sargent Road. The cost to enter is $30 per rider or person, and each registration comes with an Irish Fest Pass, t-shirt, and a drink token for those 21 and older. Riders can sign up for the ride anytime at Silver Eagle Harley-Davidson Yamaha in the clothing department, or on the morning of the ride. Entrance to Iowa Irish Fest is not included with the High Nelly bike ride or Shamrock and Run Loop registrations, but tickets can be purchased at a discount. Next is a story submitted by Jeff Reinitz, man arrested for sex abuse. Dateline Waterloo. A Waterloo man has been arrested after investigators uncovered a video of him having sex with a girl. Waterloo police arrested Sebastian Evan Enriquez, 21, of 435 Baltimore Street on Wednesday on one count of second-degree sexual abuse. Bond was set at $20,000. Enriquez is accused of having sex with a 13-year-old girl at his home and recording the encounter. The incident happened in early June, and authorities were notified on June 12th. Teen injured in shooting in Waterloo, filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo. A teenager was injured in a shooting in Waterloo on Wednesday evening. Details weren't available, but the 14-year-old suffered an injury to his lower leg and was taken to a local hospital by private vehicle, according to police. Authorities said his injuries aren't life-threatening. Officers said the teen was outside when the shots rang out in the 800 block of Grant Avenue around 8:05 p.m. Wednesday. Investigators found spent shell casings in the area. No arrests have been made in connection with the shooting. Next, one arrested in May gunfire, filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo. One person has been arrested in connection with gunfire in a Waterloo neighborhood in May. Police arrested Troy Dawson Davis, Jr., 27, on Wednesday, on one count of intimidation with a weapon. Bond was set at $10,000. According to court records, officers were called to the 400 block of East 9th Street around 4:25 p.m. on May 27th for a report of gunshots. They found spent shell casings in the parking lot at Family Dollar and the intersection of East 9th and Franklin Streets. In addition, there was damage to a home struck by a bullet at 414 East 9th Street. No injuries were reported. Next, brother sentenced to prison in fatal robbery. Waterloo. A Waterloo man whose brother is accused of killing a man during a 2020 holdup has been sentenced to prison in connection with the robbery. On Monday, Raphael Rashi Williams, 31, of Waterloo, was sentenced to up to 25 years in prison on account of first-degree robbery. Under the sentence, Williams will have to serve at least 17 years and 6 months before he will be eligible for parole. Authorities allege Raphael Williams and his brother, Robert Lee Williams, Jr., had planned to rob a drug dealer on Dearborn Avenue on August 15, 2020. After the two approached the house, their attention was diverted to a neighboring garage on Adrian Street, where Vincent Hemingway and others were working on a motorcycle. The two briefly talked to the men in the garage, and Robert Williams, Jr. then pulled out a pistol. A short struggle followed, and Hemingway was shot in the chest and later died. Police responding to the shooting found Raphael Williams walking in the area wearing shoes that matched prints near the scene. Robert Williams, Jr., 33, was charged with first-degree murder. He is awaiting trial. Raphael Williams was convicted of robbery during an April trial. Others arrested in the case include Anna Barinabos McLemore and Tonkeya Jackson. Barinabos was killed in an unrelated shooting on May 22nd while out on bond. Jackson is awaiting trial. Now on the sports page, we have a story about college football. Iowa lands coveted recruit from Southeast Polk. Story filed by Steve Batterson. Caden Proctor had his choice of elite college football programs. The 6'8", 335-pound offensive tackle for Southeast Polk has chosen to stay home, becoming the highest-rated recruit to ever commit to the Iowa football program. Proctor announced Tuesday on social media that he had committed to the Hawkeyes, selecting Iowa over Alabama from among a collection of 44 scholarship offers. Quote, Been a long time coming. The wait is over. Hawkeye Nation, you got my everything from the first day I got there. Let's work. I'm home, Proctor wrote in making his announcement. Proctor reached that decision after making an official visit to Iowa City last weekend and visiting Alabama earlier in June. Ranked 14th in the Rivals 100 listing of the nation's top prospects in the 2023 recruiting class, Proctor is also ranked by Rivals as the top offensive tackle prospect in the nation. Both Rivals and 24/7 Sports rate the five-star recruit as the top prospect at any position in the state of Iowa in the next year's senior class. He is the fourth offensive lineman to commit to the Hawkeyes, joining four-star prospect Trevor Lauk of Indianapolis and three-star prospects Leighton Jones of Brownsburg, Indiana, and Cannon Leonard of Gilman, Illinois. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, July 1st. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.